Hello again and welcome back. In this episode, I interview Matthew Corbin. Matthew is a fifth degree black belt, an eight-figure business owner, and a certified life coach. He works with successful business owners who find themselves totally out of balance, and as a result, find themselves successful at work, but failing in other key areas of life like health and relationships. I love this interview. I completely resonated with Matthew in that he, like me, nearly lost his life by living out of balance for too many years. He's another example of trading health for wealth. His near-death experience and being what he calls a second lifer put him on his current path of sharing the life-changing lessons he only realized after facing his death head-on. There's so many aha gems that he shares in this conversation. He talks about how we start our business ambitions from a place of purity, but how quickly that turns to pride, from which destructive patterns ensue. He shares how expectations start to control our life, robbing us of the beauty of being in the present moment, and how he offers his process, Discovery Pivot Launch, as a way to break from the domineering success trap. If you feel stuck, lost, overwhelmed, frustrated, and or anchored, unanchored, and completely out of balance, you'll wish to listen in. Please enjoy my conversation with Matthew Corbin. Matthew, welcome to the Wealthy Wealthy Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, I was introduced to you through a podcast service that finds my show and matches me up with guests who think that would be a really good guest on the Wealthy Wealthy Podcast. And when I go through those, I get sent quite a few actually. And then out of all the numbers that are sent to me, I only really choose a small percentage. And I choose those where their story or their expertise or something really resonates with me. Therefore, I think will resonate with my listeners. And what I want you to do is to share a little story. But before you do that, just who you are and what brought us to this point. But why I chose you is I think we share very similar stories, and really just being in the grind, being in the success and achievement game, being where work is everything, putting the rest of life on the sidelines, trying to get there, and then wound up on our deathbed. And being on that deathbed changes everything. I know it changed me, completely pivoted my life to where I'm doing what I'm doing right now, where I walked away from the old life and completely rebuilt a new one and lived my life radically different than I did when I wasn't aware that I was in that life before. So I think you, sir, share a similar story. So please tell us about you and just a little life story and what brought you to the place where we're sitting down having this conversation together.
Hi, thank you. Oh my God, I'm so excited to be here. And I have a lot of stories to share. First of all, I'm Matthew Corbin. I'm a certified health and life coach. And I've been doing this for only 4 or 5 years. Before that, I was a business consultant. I had my own company. I worked all over the world. And I think it will be part of my story, why I changed. And I can say that my friends and the people who know me, they still wonder and ask me, how come you gave up everything just to become a coach? How come you gave up an empire that you built over more than 25 years? And just became a coach and you're coaching people. And I think you said something very important, that moment, the near-death experience changes everything. And it gives you a new purpose, a new way of looking at things. And it's what it did to me. Yeah.
So tell us about what was the business before and what was the pivotal moment? What was the life experience that put you on the bed where you're kind of looking at yourself? Because we hear these stories. I mean, you know, we've heard it over and over and over that on your deathbed, you're not going to be wondering about the sale you didn't get. You're not going to be thinking about, you know, how many zeros are behind your name. You're really going to be looking at different things. And we're told that. And I guess, I don't know. I guess maybe we think it's not going to happen to us, or we've got plenty of time. And I know for me, I was in that type of narrative. And I can tell you, I can tell everybody listening, and I think you can too, that on my deathbed, I didn't give a damn about any of the material possessions I had. I didn't care about the achievements and all those awards that were, you know, placarded all over my walls. I really was just looking at my life looking at the sacrifices I made and the relationships I didn't nurture and the health that I gave up. I traded my health for wealth and just looking at those, and all I wanted was time back. All I wanted was my health back. All I wanted, I just wanted to do over, you know, it's like, I want to do over. And it's just so grateful to, that I got the do over. And it sounds like you did too. But tell us about that moment of, you know, what did life look like before and what happened?
You said it so right. I think that moment, let me, before I tell you about this moment, let me tell you why I got to this moment and how I get myself to this moment. Because, I mean, it's not by chance. I think I've been planning this moment my whole life, but I didn't know. I mean, only if I knew. Let me start from the beginning, the day I was born, because I believe as a coach as well that the early childhood programming affects us big time now. And the reason why whatever happened to me happened, and we're going to talk about it now, is because of my childhood, I guess. So I was born in Beirut, Lebanon, and that was in 1976. And why I mentioned this date, because it's when the big war started. So the first 13 years of my life, I changed maybe 10 schools, and I saw more than 4 houses burn that we used to live in. And I remember that image so very well in my head. I was 6 or 7, and I was running with my mom and little sister and the older brother. My father wasn't around. He was traveling. And I looked over my shoulder and I see our house burning in flames. And I still see it until now. So until the age of 13, I was running away. We were hiding in shelters. We were basically running for our lives. I don't have any pictures, any memories, anything like in pictures or anything tangible in my hands, because everything was burned. Everything is in my head. But funny enough, we used to have fun, and the fun game we used to do, as you know, we were kids and we wanted to play and have fun. So we used to sit in shelters, and the shelter was like a small room, and we were over maybe 60 or 70 people there, and mostly kids, because women were usually are planning or cooking or doing something, and men are trying to sneak out to get us water or food or anything. So as kids, we were guessing some numbers, and the numbers were 80, 90, no, 110. And funny enough, these numbers are the caliber of the cannons that were hitting us. And we know it. We know that that's 110 caliber 50 miles away. And we were kids. So anyways, I left Lebanon. I left to Europe, to Switzerland, to France. I got my education. And I started working. And when I started working, I knew that I was going to have a family eventually, because I love family. And I didn't want to give my kids and my family the childhood that I had. So I started with the pure objective. And in one of my concepts or theories I'm writing in my book, I talk about the shift from a pure to a pride. And it starts with a pure objective. And this is how it started with me, and I guess with everyone, before we start having all the pride and nurturing our egos with the anyways, I'm getting there. I'm not gonna burn steps. So I started working, and for the first 5 years of my life, I remember the HR of the company I used to work for, it was an American company based in Dubai, and I was based in Dubai. He called me over and he said, "You've been with us for 5 years and you haven't taken any day off." And I thought it was something nice. And I was like, yeah, you see, it's an achievement. So I worked basically for over 20, 25 years, more than 17, 18 hours a day. And for the last 10 years, when I did my own company and my own empire, and I was handling clients all over the world, even governments, and consulting for everyone, I was living out of suitcase on a plane. I didn't know where I would land. I had no home. I had nothing. Everyone was just envying me, saying, "God, you keep on traveling. You're lucky." And deep inside, I wasn't happy because I didn't have a place to go to at the end of the day and call it home. My family were here in Ohio, where I am now, and they live here. And I was all over the world, one day in Dubai, the other day in India, the third day in Beirut. Me just flying wherever clients are, wherever deals are. And whenever there's something impossible, I would pitch in and challenge myself to do it. And honestly, I was enjoying the being in the center of attention. I was enjoying being on cover of magazines. I was enjoying the zeros in my bank account. And this is the shift from the pure objective that I had, that I'm doing everything for my family, to the pride that it's me. I remember one day I came here to Ohio to celebrate Christmas with my family, and my youngest child, James, he was maybe 4 or 5. I left after 24 hours. So he ran and he grabbed onto my foot and he said, "Please don't leave, Dad. Please don't leave." I said, "I have to leave. I work and I get money. This is why you live in a nice place." So he said, "Wait." So he ran to his room. He came back with this piggy bank, a doggy-shaped piggy bank, and he gave it to me. And he said, "Break it, take all the money, and don't leave." And I mean, now I'm saying it, and I have all chills and tears maybe. But back then, I looked at him and I told him, "You don't understand. I'm doing this for you." And I just left. And wow, I mean, so yeah. This was the whole thing, and I started getting fat and fat. And although I was fit and I'm a martial artist, but I even abandoned this for a while, and because I didn't have for time for anything, and I wasn't eating healthy, I wasn't living healthy, I was snacking all the time, I was going to every dinner, every boat party, everything, just to close deals. So I reached a place where I was over 400 pounds, and yeah, I was a semi. So I went to a doctor one day, and before that I was having some real health issues, and my wife was always telling me, "You need to see a doctor, you need to see a doctor, you're fainting, you're becoming all yellow." And I was saying, "No, there's nothing." And sometimes I would fall. I'm walking and I'll just fall, and I start like eating sweets and stuff just for my so I can stand up again. And I kept saying, "No, I'm fine. I'm fine. I don't have time for this. I have a meeting here. I have a meeting there. I don't have time for this." And one day I went to see this doctor, this famous doctor in Beirut, in Lebanon. And they have the best doctors and the best hospitals there. And it's affordable. So I went there and I saw this doctor. And he said, I told him, "Listen, I can't walk. And you need to do something with the medicine. Just replace my knees. Put some RoboCop stuff knees or whatever you want to do." And, you know, when you're on this level, like, it's amazing how we become arrogant and how we see the world from a different perspective, and how people start looking at us in a weird way, and we just don't care. We lose our human side and our compassion. And I feel ashamed of myself, of being there. Because just now I remember myself how I was. And my friends now tell me, "My God, look at you now. I mean, you're a different person." So my doctor said, "Yeah, sure. Let's put you on this on the test. Let's do all kind of tests and stuff." So he did all kind of tests, and it took him a couple of hours. So I woke up after a couple of hours, and I was on the table still on the bed. And he said, and he had his hand stretched in front of my face, with his 5 fingers stretched in front of my face. And I was like, I was still waking. I was like, "What is he trying to do? He's trying to be funny. He's trying to high five me." And I was like, "I don't have time for this, doc. I'm not going to high five you. So is it done?" He said, "No. Can you count my finger?" I said, "Okay. Yes, 5. It's another thing, count and stuff." And he said, "Yes, these are 5 months you still have to live." And it hit me. I was like, "What? Wait, I don't know you. You're not supposed to joke with me." He said, "I don't joke. I'm a doctor." I said, "Okay." He said, "You have 5 months to live. You have a severe inflammation in your organs, and your spleen has total failure, and your whole blood is poisoned. And that's it. I understand you're a very successful businessman. You have your money and everything. Go spend your money for the next five months." And it hit me. And I was like, "What? No. So honestly, at this moment, the only thing that kept me going is just the thought of my family, the voice of my kids and my wife, and why no? And you know, the faith. I mean, I used to have faith. I still have faith. Now I do. But at that point, when I was working, you forget about everyone, even God, even your family, everyone. You just want your bank account to get fat and fat, and you convince yourself that you're doing it for other people, and you're not actually. So I looked up. I said, God, I'm sorry. I forgot you all of these years, and this is how we are. We forget you when we're doing good, and we remember you when we need you. But you're good, so don't leave me now. And I promise you, I'm gonna repair this. I'm gonna do it differently, and I will make everyone proud. And I look at the doctor. I said, I'll take the operation. He said, it's a 50-50. I said, I'll take it. He said, you sign a paper and you call your family and stuff. I said, no, I'll call my lawyer only. And if I wake up, I'll go to my family. If I don't, then too bad. I mean, I'm not going to call my family now. It's too late. Plus, I feel ashamed. So I took the operation, and that moment was the pivot. That moment was the most important moment. When I was lying on the operating table, and those 5 seconds before the doctor puts the thing on my face and counts till five and I go to sleep, those 5 seconds seemed like 5 years maybe. And during these 5 minutes, excuse me, 5 seconds, I had a flashback. I saw everyone that I didn't do anything towards. I saw every relation I didn't nurture. I saw my whole personal life on the sideline. I didn't see any deal, honestly. I didn't see any pitch. I didn't see anything. All I saw is just my kids, just my friends, just everyone around me caring about me and me acting like a total jerk, excuse my French, and just caring about myself only. I mean, these 5 seconds were wow. And I remember I saw myself on the table, and I looked at myself on the table, and I was afraid. The fear I felt, and I was fearless all my life. And that moment was scary. I mean, I was afraid. I wanted to grab on to life. I didn't want to let go. And I said, no. I'm not. I'm gonna fight with everything I have. I'm gonna give up everything. I wanna start over. I mean, just give me that second chance, you know. I woke up after 8 hours of operation. They removed all of my organs, and it took me over a year to recover. And until now, I can't operate normally. I can't eat most of the stuff, but I've adapted. I lost weight. I'm 160 now. So, and when I woke up, I called my partners, I called my accountant, and I said, liquidate my shares. I don't want my empire. I don't want my company. Give it to charity. Give it to everyone. I don't want anything. I just want to go back to my house, to my home, to my family. I want to sit there. I will do something. I don't know what I will do now. And I didn't know what to do. And I went back home and I sat for 6 months alone in my room, feeling ashamed and not knowing what to do. And honestly, sometimes it would just come to my mind and say, go back to your company, go back to your empire. You know every CEO in the whole Middle East, in Dubai and everywhere, because this is where I worked mostly. Just go there and do it again. Because this was my comfort zone and I wanted to go back to feel alive, but I did not. I just kept on fighting this. And one day my wife came into my room and she said, you know that throughout the whole 20, 25 years you've been working and I've known you. I said, yeah. She said, you know that a lot of people who worked with you, they still call you for advice. You know that every friend we know, they come to you for help, for advice. I said, yes. She said, maybe this is what you're meant to do. Maybe you meant to help people because you're good at this and you love doing this. And it struck me. I was like, yeah, yes. So I started researching and stuff. And I went back to school. I got certified as a coach. And 4 years ago, I started coaching people, and I started reaching out to people who were me, my old version, and I knew them, and they know my story, and I started coaching them, and I feel so blessed. I was able to help a lot of people, and I'm still, honestly, I'm not as wealthy as I was before, but I discovered that, I mean, being wealthy is not having a big fat bank account. I mean, yeah, you want to be at peace and you want to have peace of mind and you want to pay your bills and stuff, but you need to have a balanced life. And this is the main thing I do in my coaching, is coach people on being balanced and balance their lives. I mean, my whole life has been a roller coaster, maybe, and I'm settling now. I tell people, when everyone started at very young age, I'm starting now in my mid-40s, and it's already hard for me. I'm moving to a new country. I'm speaking my third language as English. It's hard on every front, but we have to make it happen. We have to fight hard. And I've been blessed. I've been given a second chance.
Wow, there's so much in that story. One, I mean, I was, all these emotions were coming up. And one, just hearing your story. And then, like I said, it just, oh my God, I feel exactly what you felt. Like I was exactly there in your story and in my own. And I love what you said as far as going from pure to pride. And isn't that so true that we are purely motivated, but then it becomes the ego game, the achievement game. And it's like this game that more is better. So no matter where we get financially or with the empire, it's just never enough. And I call it getting stuck in the never enough game, that you think when I get there, then things will, I'll be balanced. But you just get in this pattern where it controls you, thinking sometime in the future, I guess I'll be a good father or a good mother or get my health back. But it's just this weird, like, what is that energy we get stuck in where it just doesn't stop? And you and I had this similar place where we really traded our health for wealth and got the wealth, but there was never a stopping point until we're like taken out. Like, what is it a cultural narrative? Is it like, what is it that takes us from pure to pride? Is it the accolades that we just start feeling good about ourselves and keeps us in that type of nonsense?
I think so. I mean, it's, I think so. It's satisfying our own egos. I mean, it feels good and you want more and you want more. And the scary part is when we start making excuses for ourselves, saying, I'm going to stop when I achieve this and that. And I mean, I remember waking up to the world, not finding my father around because he was away traveling and working and always living on a plane. And I always remember, I mean, I remember one day I was 9 years old and he called and I said, Dad, when are you coming back home? And he said, in 2 years, son, I'm doing something. And in 2 years, exactly, I'll be home and you'll be 11. And last time I asked him this question, maybe a couple of months ago, and he's over 70. And I said, Dad, when are we going to see you? You know, I have my son is a teenager. He's 16. And my other son is nine. He's eight now. He's nearly nine. And they barely know you. When are you going to come and see them? And he said, in a couple of months. And it never stops. It never stops. I mean, some people, I don't know what it is. But this is why I think we are here as coaches or mentors, because we need to help these people realize that there's much more than wealth and career. I mean, there's a balance in life and we need to maintain our balance.
Well, that the joy and happiness is in the right here, right now. It's not out there somewhere. You can't chase it. You can't go buy it. You can't. It's in any special moment between even the moment that we dance or share here. There's just so much special, get to know this other human and spend time and be grateful for this versus that chase energy is what I call it, that there and chase energy. So when you say, you know, we're such a product of our, you know, of our childhood programming. For me, mine came in, you know, before I hit like my breaking point, like yours, being on that deathbed, mine was my childhood programming is I was never good enough. Like my parents were never around, you know, and I mean, I was a super achiever. So I was just became this super achiever as a kid just to try to get attention, straight A student and a great athlete. And, you know, I mean, I excelled at everything, but my parents never showed up. They were never there. And then that would became my adult programming that no matter where I got, I was just trying. I think my entire career became, look at me, I'm somebody important and special. And that's what gave me, I got that from kind of all these external praises based on, you know, the more successful I got, the more praise I got. And it was all that childhood need that I was never got as a kid. But at the same time, sure, I was getting that, like you said, it felt good. But my family was being, I mean, they were kind of, they were not the priority and my health wasn't a priority and I was completely out of balance. And so I know that I had to break that programming. It was your programming that your dad was never around. And that was the story. And now all of a sudden we think as kids, we're not going to repeat our patterns or the patterns of our parents. And now you're becoming your dad. Uh-huh. And that just was that natural thing. Like, oh, dad's not home.
Yeah. Yeah. So true. I mean, and what you said is I see it a lot. Actually, I'm coaching a couple of amazing clients and they have this thing, and I realized something, and I helped them with something, and I'm sure you know it already, and you've seen it, that when this happens to us, and when we try to be brilliant or outstanding, because back when we were kids, we weren't enough, we never stop and look at ourselves. We always see ourselves in the eyes of other people, and this is the wrong thing that we shouldn't do. We should look at ourselves. We should set a vision for ourselves. We should have a destiny map, and we should see where we are, the progress we're doing, and stop seeing ourselves in the eyes of other people. This is the key thing for me.
Yeah. I mean, I have that moment in my head of your son grabbing, you know, your leg and getting a piggy bank, you know, and then we still walk away. It's just fascinating that we do these things. And so I know, like on my deathbed, it was just this wake up call where I looked back on my life and thinking, what was I thinking and what the hell? And there was just so much shame and remorse and guilt and like, how did I even do that? But then it was the reshaping, and the story like yours is, I mean, I made a promise to Mother You that, Mother You, if you give me another chance, I promise I'm going to walk away from the bullshit. And I'm going to teach what I've learned on this year of fighting for my life and these lessons that came up. And it sounds, you know, similar thing in walking away from the empire, turning my back on that old life, which was the scariest thing I've ever done in my life. And I didn't know what I was going to do either. Yeah. I didn't know. And it's a scary place to think you've had all this success and all this money and all this fame when there's just like nothingness. It's like just this white canvas of like, holy shit, I have no idea what I'm going to do next. But I'm just going to keep putting one step in front of the other. And just, but what I call that, and I'd love to know your thoughts about it, is we create these identities of who we are, like you said, through what other people think of us. So it's who we are. It's my identity was that. So if I'm not that, who am I and what am I? And that was this void of like, I don't know who I am or what I am if it's not that. And that became this miraculous journey of figuring out who I am and what I am, detached from any achievement or success or accolade, and what is this purpose that I'm destined to be? And it's not like this bright light came off and it's like, wow, it's just really discovering it. And it sounds like you really went through a similar journey of just this, holy shit, maybe I should go back to what it was, because this not knowing is really, really uncomfortable.
It is, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's a bumpy road. This transition is very bumpy, and you get tempted to go back many times because, I mean, just like you said, you were good at what you're doing and you have your empire, you have everything, and just want to go back. And I think this is human nature. We like our comfort zone and we defend our comfort zone. And this is why we make excuses whenever we're doing good, because this is our comfort zone. We're happy. We're doing good. I mean, it's not broken. Why fix it? I'm going to keep on doing whatever I'm doing, and I'm going to just make some excuses and just carry on and carry on and carry on. And this is what happens. And then, I mean, I remember, just like you said, this period, this transition period for me was scary. I was feeling void. I was feeling blank and it's like, what do I do? I've been advising, I've been a consultant for over 20 years. I have my company. I have 288 people reporting to me. Now I have no one, and I can't even boss my wife. She bosses me.
So, yeah.
I mean, it's scary, but then when you really discover what you want to do and you start doing it and you find that you're really good at this and this is your purpose, this is the best thing ever. It's this aha moment. It's this moment that makes you smile when you put your head on the difference. I tell my wife this. I said before I used to put my head before I sleep on the pillow and think about the deals and what to do tomorrow. And I used to have a notepad next to my bed. Sometimes I wake up and write numbers and stuff. Now I smile and sleep and go into deep sleep. And this is the big difference.
It is. And now, like, once I would never go back to the lifestyle, and it's almost painful to see people that are stuck in that. And it's so obvious now versus before. I mean, clearly it wasn't obvious at all, but yeah, part of it too, it's, you know, I think because of this and the lack of awareness we're in, that we complicate our lives, and the more complicated it's like, I'm doing it for the money. I'm doing it for you, son or wife or whatever, to have all these things and this certain lifestyle and complicate. And then really the beauty of life is in the simplicity. It's in the space. It's in, you know, like before I was just so stuck in the velocity, how fast I could go and how much I could do. And now every once in a while, when my life gets a little bit more busy, let's say, and I start bumping up against that type of frenetic energy, before, I mean, I fed off of that. And now it's like, now that is my reminder, like, nope, step off the gas. Like it's to kind of create some more space, you know, create more time, that type of thing, because I don't even like that feeling before I felt fed off of it. But, you know, it's just this, I just call it this awareness of, like you said, you don't have as many zeros as you used to have. I don't have as many zeros, but my God, life is just, it's just so beautiful in the simplicity of waking up and loving who you are and what you do. And if you just help one person, it's a really great day.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you said it so true. This simplicity is the best. And I guess something that's not helping nowadays is the pressure that everyone goes through in his entourage, in his society, in the community, in everything. There's a pressure about everything. I mean, the moment you step out of your house, there's a pressure of what you're wearing, what car you're driving, where you're going, how you speak. Everything is all expectations and expectations. And the mistake that I think we do is we want to match and exceed those expectations all the time. And we can never do, because whenever we come close to this, to matching the expectation, the bar gets higher and higher and higher. And there's expectation for everything. And this is something not helping, especially now with social media, with videos, with everyone posting everything and bragging. And it's so tiring. It's so tiring. So this is why I think, and what I tell my audience and my clients, stop looking at people. Do not compare yourself with others. Don't look at this person, what he or she is posting on social media. Maybe they're living a miserable life and they're not showing it. They need to show that they are something important on social media so they could feel good. You don't have to feel bad yourself. Just feel good for them. And let's relieve this pressure from us. We don't have to wear or dress up for other people or drive a fancy car or I don't know. I mean, I gave up trying to match or to speak in an American accent, honestly, because people expect me to, as American, to speak in American accent. But the French is my first language, and it messed my accent. And I give it up. I mean, that's it. I'm gonna talk the way I talk. And I gave up this pressure a long time ago, and I feel happier. You know?
I love that. So let's switch gears just a little bit. We both, like I said, we share a similar journey. And part of why I teach what I teach and coach what I coach, and I'm guessing the same for you, is, I mean, I had to wind up on my deathbed for me to wake the F up. And it's the best thing that ever happened to me, was to go through that miserable, horrific, dark, dark, scary, scary period to be able to be where I am today. I mean, that's what I had to do. But I don't want everybody to have to go through what you and I have been through. So what do you coach to? What do you see when you see people that were in that pattern that you and I were? We had to be taken to our knees to be able to wake up and to be able to transform our life to where we are now. But what do you advise people where you see them that they can go through this transition without having to be taken out before, you know, being forced to do it?
You know, we always say reading history is the best way to learn stuff. And we have seen throughout the times many leaders making big mistakes and losing since Bonaparte maybe, and everyone, without naming big names, failing to achieve whatever they want because they did not honor history. They did not respect history. And this is what I start with my clients. I tell them, listen, I was doing it to myself. And when everyone, my wife and everyone who cared about me, used to tell me, stop killing yourself. And I used to say, no, I'm very strong. And we're not. I mean, we don't have to put ourselves to test to know that we're strong. We have just to create the balance. And the coaching I have developed is very balanced. And I know exactly what every business person and entrepreneur and CEO, and they go through. I know they don't have time to think. I know they don't want to compromise any deal or any time or anything. I know they're not going to go out and exercise for 2 hours and order salads and just go to a party and eat, I don't know, kale or something. I know this. And this is why we keep it realistic. I mean, the most important thing is for them to realize that they need help and that it takes real strength and courage to ask for help. It's not weakness. Like I used to think, honestly, before that I'm not going to ask for help. I'm not weak. No, you're strong. This is why you ask for help, because we live in a community. I mean, we need to help each other. Otherwise, just go live on an island.
That's so important. And, you know, I know even that old narrative I lived in was, I'm so strong, I'm invincible. I carry the world on my shoulders. I take care of everyone. This is my job. It's my role. And then waking up realizing like, oh my gosh, no,
yeah.
our bodies can crumble. Our bodies are fragile. You know, they have to be taken care of. And, you know, a metaphor I've used is, you know, maybe, you know, I'm designed to be an F1 car, an F1 engine, but they take more care. Yeah. They take a lot more time and care and repair to be able to race like that. So you go race fast for a short period of time, and then you take 3x that time to regenerate, to repair, to take care. And those, you'd burn out the F1 engine really quickly if it never took a break, if it never got, you know, that balance and that repair. And I think so many entrepreneur, CEO, executive types that we just believe until we're reminded that our bodies can't keep it. They do such a good job to keep going until it just can't go anymore. Yeah. And I had every single red flag like you telling me, like, honey, you're crumbling. And I just kept pushing and pushing and pushing because I didn't have time to go to the doctor, which seems silly now, doesn't it? That type of mindset.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's so true. And I love this metaphor you mentioned. It's so true. I mean, you just race for 1 hour and recover for 3 weeks. And this is our bodies. I mean, we need to be balanced. We need the balance in our life.
And the joy is in the balance. And I call it actually something I've called it is balancing, in the sense that when we put the ing to it, the ing, it doesn't mean there's ever a state of complete balance. But for me, it's this awareness when I'm feeling out of balance, then it's time to do some balancing, that something's off, that I'm too tipped one way. So now I need to just do some work to tip a little bit the other way, you know, and it's kind of flowing with life that there's no constant state of balance, but it's the awareness when we're moving towards that out of balance again, and then coming back like, oh, there went my meditation practice. Oh, there went my exercise. All right, I need to get back in. I know the tools, I know the practices, and I got back in that energy. I'm reminded. So now step back. And to give ourselves that space to too, kind of, you know, ebb and flow, because life happens and there's ups and downs in different states where we need to take more time and put more energy and do what kind of the race and the sprint. But then it's like, all right, now I need to take some time and space to regenerate, to recover, to relax, to reach more of a balanced state.
Yeah, so true. I mean, while you were talking, I had this image in my mind. I was watching a movie, a Japanese movie, a couple of months ago. And it was an amazing movie. This sensei, this instructor, a master teaching his students, and they were in the country. And he called two students, and he has two fields: one field of wheat, and another field of roses. And he said, "You race, and the one who wins will choose a field, and it's his." And they raced, and the stronger one, he said, "I won, and now I will choose the roses." And the other one, he said, "Okay, I knew that you would choose the roses, so I let you win because I don't want the roses, I want the wheat." And the master was standing and he said, "Why do you choose the roses?" He said, "Of course, the roses are more beautiful, they have smell, they have, it's nice, and I wouldn't choose those ugly things, sticks." And the master said, "If the wind blows, it will cut all the roses, but these sticks, the wheat, they will just lean with the wind. They're flexible. And this is how you should be. You should be more flexible. You should lean left and right. You should." And when you said about balancing and the ink, I love this. This image came to my mind. How these things that we think they're not beautiful, they go left and right with the wind and they stay alive. While the beautiful thing like the roses that we love, they just die with this. And It's amazing. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I love that story, that metaphor. And it makes me, you know, just kind of want to float with the wind. You go back and forth. All right. Well, we're wrapping up our time together. But you have a process that you guide people through that's called, you know, Discovery Pivot Launch. What does that mean?
It's the process I have developed myself. I spent so much time to develop this, then I put it to testing, and now I've been using it for four years, and it's very successful. It's three phases. It's as simple as three phases. The first phase is the discovery process, and in the discovery process, I help my clients discover their why, and I think this is the most important thing: to know your why, to know your vision, and once you know your vision, who are you, who you want to be. And not who you want to be in the future, who you want to be now. And then you start drawing your destiny map. And this is the second one, the pivot, when you really pivot and do something that you should be doing rather than, because like Einstein said it, if you keep doing the same thing, you cannot expect different results. It's just insanity to expect different results and you keep doing the same thing over and over again. And the third phase is the launch. It's the actual steps is where I give my clients and my audience this image saying that, imagine you are just on the border of a river and I'm with you and there's a strong river there and you want to get to the other side of the river. So what I will do is I will lay down the stones in the river and I'll take your hand and walk with you. But you have to be walking. I'm not going to walk for you. You have to walk. I will walk sometimes in front of you, sometimes next to you, shoulder to shoulder, and I will help you walking. But you need to do 1-2. So 1-2 is seeing the other side. That's discovery. The second part is the pivot, which is laying down the stones and drawing the steps. And the launch is starting to walk.
That's beautiful. Thank you. All right. To wrap up, a few final questions. Tell me, say, Christina, if you really, really knew me, you would know that. Tell me something about you that few people know.
Wow. I don't know. A lot of things. I look tough and I'm not tough. I hide I cry in movies and my wife laughs at me.
I love it. I so resonate with that. All right. So tell me a brag moment. What's something you're really proud of?
Something I'm proud of. I'm proud of, I think I'm proud of what I'm doing now. I'm proud of, I'm grateful for the second chance I have, but I'm proud that I was able to walk away from my old life. Although I love my old life, and but I'm proud of myself that I made a career doing what I love, what I want to do, even at the age of 45, but I still did it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Let's flip it. What's a big fat failure that's been one of your biggest life lessons?
I guess not fighting for the thing that I love when I was young. I knew that growing up and when I reached almost the adult age, I knew that I loved two things, and one of the things was music, and I was going to music school and learning to play music, and I left this because I've seen most of the artists starving and I didn't want to starve. And I regret this.
Thank you for sharing that. One final question that to wrap this up. Is there a big myth, a big fat lie out there that you'd like to call out, that you would like to bust?
Yeah. A lot of things. I think pretension. I mean, I don't like it, and I mean, I've seen a lot. I used to do it myself, and I see a lot of people doing it. Pretend that they like you, or like something, or are something, or and they're not. And the problem with this is they think it's like an ostrich who puts her head in the sand. You know, she thinks that no one sees her. The problem is we know that it's not true, and they don't. And I don't like this, because when this happens, you cannot respect this person anymore. It's like you get disappointed, and it's happening a lot lately. Just as I said, because everyone wants to match the expectations around, so they start just pretending. And I just miss the old times, maybe, when there weren't much pressure around.
Yeah, that forces that pretense.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Wow, your story is so big and so beautiful, and I'm very grateful that you had that life experience that's created the version of you that sits with us here today, and that's going to help, that is helping, and will continue to help so many people. And by the way, one of the first things when I heard you talk, I thought, oh my God, I love your accent. So I'm really happy you. That you decided to stick with it.
Thank you. That's so sweet of you. Thanks a lot.
Matthew, thank you so much for your time, for your story, for your work. We'll make it really easy for anybody listening that wants to meet you, potentially work with you. I'll put all that in the show notes so that they can reach out to you, because I know your story is going to resonate with many of my listeners that are very entrepreneurial and are working hard and just maybe stuck in some of what you and I have discussed today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been amazing and different. I like the improv style. I love this. It's so sincere and genuine. Thank you.
You're welcome. If you enjoyed today's show, there are a few things you could do as a way to say thanks. First, simply hit the subscribe button to the Wealthy Wealthy podcast. By doing so, it helps both of us. You'll never miss an episode, and it helps me and my ratings. Second, if you're so ambitious, please leave a review while you're at it. Third, just keep doing what you're doing and continue to share the Wealthy Wealthy podcast with your tribe of friends and colleagues. On another note, although you likely listen to the podcast when remote, keep in mind that there are links to the guests and their work in the show notes that you can find at www.podcast.com. You can also find at www.podcast.com the latest information on my upcoming events and other things I'm creating to serve you in our mutual quest to live a wealthy, wealthy life. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time.